You know the saying about the hand?
What king dreams, the hand builds.
I've been to Fishmaid once who told me the lowborn have a choicer way to put it. The king eats, they say, and the hand takes the shit.
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast. We're pleased to consist of Greg Atkinson, Will Lentz, Brett Seiler, and occasional guest stars where we discuss a variety of topics. Many thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for a wonderful series, Fantasy Flight Games for producing a great game, CardGamesDB.com for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear.
So, would that make Daryl the hand?
I would love for Daryl to be my hand.
Hey, I'll be the hand.
Few things Daryl enjoys more
than being a hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if the price is right, I would wipe a couple asses a day.
I know you would. And the price has been right.
Which is free, I assume.
Yes, I don't pay Daryl.
You don't?
No, I don't. For the past 3 years.
This whole time I thought it was like building up Brett Seiler double dollars.
No,
yeah. Like
there's no such thing as Brett Seiler double dollars.
I've been meaning to tell you something about that, Daryl, that Swiss bank account doesn't exist.
It doesn't at all.
That's depressing.
Like I said, a lot of good years.
Well, I know I'm not headed to your house after fajita night anymore.
You love fajita night.
I mean, it's okay. It's no Stir Friday, but...
After I gave you Stir Friday. That is better.
That is actually better. I still want to know what Cyril had to begin with.
Before Stir Friday.
But anyway, now that we've worked in the obligatory Archer reference... this is episode 110.
Alright, well again, this is Two Champs, One Chump. I am Brett Seiler, intentionally anonymous on the boards.
Will Lentz, generally known as Kennen.
Daryl Lloyd, known as Gearhalt on the boards, I guess, if you follow the drunk thread.
I've been keeping up with the drunk thread recently.
Have you posted recently? I haven't seen you post recently.
He posted like a week ago, I think.
Are you live drunk posting right now, Daryl?
No, I am not. This is not as special as the Bruno episode.
Oh, okay.
Because to be fair, I'm not super drunk, unfortunately. I want to be.
Yes.
Trust me, the mind is willing, but the body is in a lot of pain due to... I can't pronounce the word, but I have an infected gum from a wisdom tooth coming in. So at the moment, the D-train is in a lot of pain, but I'm a team player, so I'm going to record this effing podcast.
Good.
You know, way to be, Daryl. I'm glad you're willing to take one for the team.
Daryl always takes one for the team.
So,
you know what I mean.
You know, speaking of taking one for the team, I think Daryl did some good work for us.
I think
recently.
He did also.
Did he not?
I believe so.
I like to think that I did do some good work. Recently, I had been contacting some of my peeps at FFG, and with a fair amount of groveling and angry handy J's and giving away my firstborn, we've got our first official Two Champs, One Chump exclusive spoiler here for you, which I am stoked about.
I mean, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
What pack or set does this spoiler come from, Daryl?
Yeah, her card number is 86.
Then, yes, she's in the next pack.
Okay. How very excellent. She was already sort of spoiled earlier. She appeared on the FFG site, but she was covered up, so we actually didn't know her text or her abilities. But it is Wyla Manderly. It is a House Stark card. She's unique. She's cost one. She has one strength. She is a lady, House Manderly. She has a power icon with a naval enhancement on it. She is stalwart, and she reads, while Wyla Manderly is defending and there is at least one attacking ally or traitor character, she gets plus three strength. Interesting.
See, I don't know, Zyler, maybe you can break the tie on this. I always assumed she was just going to be pronounced as Willa.
I pronounced her Wyla.
Okay, fair enough.
When I was reading the books, at least. But hey, according to George R. R. Martin, you can pronounce it however the fuck you want to pronounce it.
Yeah.
I guess Willa, maybe Willa does sound better, but when I first saw it, I just assumed Wyla. So I don't know. But I think she's fun. She's obviously not the most groundbreaking card we've ever seen before, but with the refugees becoming restricted, I think there's more and more need for a card like this. That's just, if your opponent has attack with an ally, she's going to, boom, that's four strength for you. So
she becomes a second Hodor, to quote something that Will said as we were prepping for the episode.
Well,
on defense when there's an ally or traitor attacking.
It was a pretty loose comparison I was making. There's folks that like to throw Hodor out there who's, conditionally useful. Possibly more useful than Willa, but she does have the opportunity to attack, so I don't know. Yeah.
And she can take attachments. That's cool.
And the naval enhancement's nothing to sneeze at. You can throw her in if there's allies around on the board. And particularly could cause a pretty large unexpected strength swing in like a melee game, for instance, where folks are more likely to forget you can throw her in.
Yeah, she's a pretty neat little cheap drop. Good traits.
Yeah, she's going to have some synergy with the follower of the many face gods.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, as they're getting more popular in Stark Maester decks.
Yeah. So, I think there's utility to be had with her, but, I think she's going to make it into a fair amount of Stark decks, but I don't think she's going to be... She obviously isn't the end-all, be-all, but man, one for a possibility of four, I like it.
And Dissension seems to be a little less played right now than it used to be. Yeah, so
since the refugees got restricted.
Yeah, so the amount of allies is creeping back up a little bit, so, the odds on her getting that strength boost are a little higher than they used to be.
I agree.
Just having that one icon is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, but there's some direwolves out there that'll give her some icons, right? What is it, Summer?
We'll give only her gives Bran. Now.
That's only Bran, isn't it? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I'd look at giving her a rusted sword.
Yeah,
there you go.
Willa Manderly jumping in with her rusty little sword.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And old man's out there to give some trait manipulation.
Yeah, and a ton of decks are running Old Nan right now. That's, not a terrible way to win a challenge on defense if you need to, or on offense.
And if you think about it, if we're talking about her being played in the Maester deck, you got the Copper Link in there to change guys into allies or traitors. You got the Steel Link, or not the Steel Link, I'm sorry, the Iron Link.
Iron to give her and Black Iron to give her extra icons.
Yeah, so... she's just from us talking about it, she's got to be in every Stark Maester deck, right?
If they're running the Stalwart deck, definitely.
Oh, yeah, totally. If they're already looking to stand their guys with a Stalwart character, definitely. I don't know if the Stalwart brings a lot to the table for her otherwise, but...
No, it doesn't.
It's kind of a neat little Nedley nod, I guess, to her in the books. If I recall, she was the only one of the Manderlys to try to speak out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you are correct.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's our Two Champs, One Chump exclusive spoiler. Hopefully the first of many. If you guys had to give her a letter grade, what would you give Wyla Manderly? Or is that maybe not something you guys want to touch necessarily?
I'd probably give her a solid C.
Yeah. She's in the C range. She's certainly not for every deck, but she's respectable for a one drop.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to kick it up a notch. I'm going to give her a B because I just from the way I see her, I think I'd put her in just about every Stark deck that I'm going to build. So maybe I'm wrong, but I like her.
Daryl's going to be out there using her with those negotiations at the Great Sept and Gaston Grays.
That's right. I can't. I'm tired of being wrong. I'm taking a chance.
He's going to say every card's great.
Yeah, exactly. That like way, you can never be the one of us that rated something poorly.
That's right. Every card will always be a B and above now. Enjoy.
New chapter pack?
Uh-huh.
There is
new
one.
Chapter pack.
New pack. What do we got?
Turn of the Tide.
Yes, it is a Turn of a Tide of some kind.
Thank goodness. I was getting antsy for new cards.
It had been a while.
I've really been enjoying this this set so far. Lots of cool stuff going on in the meta right now. So, who's up first? I'm assuming we've gone over the rating system enough times now. But
That's right.
We should.
Everything's going to be a B.
Yeah. Maybe we should at least say letter grades, similar to the U.S. Grading scale school.
Yes.
So A is the best.
F is the worst.
And F. With no E's.
There are no E's, which I always thought was weird.
I know. I agree.
That's neither here nor there.
Exactly.
Daryl, get us started.
All right, the first card is a House Lannister card. The name is House Clegane Brigands. They are 4 cost for 5 strength. So we're winning there on strength versus cost efficiency. They are an army, and they have the House Clegane trait. They have a military and an intrigue icon with a war crest, and they read, if you are running a character agenda or are not running an agenda, House Clegane Brigands gains response. After you win an intrigue challenge, stand House Clegane Brigands. Interesting.
Do you have a Warcrest also?
Yes.
Okay. I nodded off there for a second.
I covered all the bases, buddy.
Okay.
You nodded off there. Anywho. Interesting. I really don't know what else to say about these guys. I mean, you're getting 4 for 5, and they have an ability that obviously they're wanting to push for less and less agendas and giving you an incentive to not run an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
The
or
ability seems
run a character
fine.
Agenda.
That's yeah. Which the I have yet to see the Lannister character agenda really get played.
Yeah,
what's Kevin Lannister,
hasn't
right?
Seen a ton
Anywho.
Of play. Mm-hmm. He played because he's a little counter to how Neil decks usually want to work. He's going to want you to be going first. But the House Clegane Brigands play into that pretty nicely with this standing.
Definitely. Extra standing.
They've got solid strength, so by itself, it's got enough strength depending on what they defend with, of course, but say it's unopposed. They've got enough strength to trigger something like Wars of One with Quills, or Terminal Schemes.
Absolutely.
They've got that War Crest to let you trigger Price of War or
Die by the Sword.
Die by the Sword, yeah. So I think it could be solid for a landing deck that wants to go a little more aggro, which is something that they haven't quite been able to put together yet. Clansmen have tried, but haven't felt like they've quite been there.
I mean, already in this cycle, they got the Blackwater Bay Veteran, and the first pack was a cheap Warcrest, so they are getting
Well, and the Lanny fleet is is solid for very similar reasons. So it feels like some kind of Lanny aggro could be getting ready to coalesce.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely possible.
There's something that I find weird, though. Maybe one of you guys looking at the text here can see some reason why this needs to be done differently, okay? We've got the wording on House Game Brigands, which is, if you are running a character agenda or are not running an agenda, it gains yada yada yada. Versus something like Sir Archibald Ironwood has his text, is deadly and renowned, and then says, if you are running a non-character agenda, treat Sir Archibald Ironwood's printed text box as if it were blank, and then has his, the rest of his normal text. If I understand things correctly, these two completely different wordings function exactly the same in the game, right?
Not entirely. The Haskell and Brigands do still retain their traits, which with those two guys, that it blanks their entire text box, so they lose their traits.
Fair enough. Which does seem kind of awkward. Maybe that was something that FFG discovered after having done them that way and realized, we would rather go ahead and leave the traits on there.
Possible.
I don't know. It just feels weird to have such extremely similar end results with wildly different wordings.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
So. But anyway.
Yeah. So as far as ratings go, what do you guys think?
All right.
I'm
going to give these guys a solid B.
So
four for five, baby. Oh, whatever. Just go, Will.
Well, I hate to be with Daryl on this one, but I'm actually leaning towards a B myself. I've long thought that Lannister was the house that gets along the best without an agenda anyway.
No.
Really?
It's absolutely Stark.
Well, okay, yes. They have gotten several more cards now that function specifically without having an agenda. But those have been in the last couple sets, right?
True, yeah.
Prior to that, I would say Lannister got along quite well for it. And I still throw together Lannister builds, and I'm like, I'm not sure. Maybe Power Mind the Throne. Mm-hmm. But
that's fair.
It's not, dead certain. And so, I feel like Lanny probably has a home for this. Though even in Lannister, those cost slots are just always kind of crowded.
Mm-hmm.
When you got things like Jaime and Cersei and whatnot vying for those higher cost slots,
yep.
And the fleet and things now, generally four costs. So I don't know. I'm leaning towards a B myself.
I'm gonna lean towards a C for the reasons that you literally just said.
Okay. In different take on the same reasons. Very interesting.
he's a fine character. If you aren't running an agenda in Lannister, he'll be in the deck, but I don't think he's enough to drive you towards not playing an agenda.
Maybe. Yeah, geez, I don't know. I really like the thought of some Lanny aggro.
I think it's a step action. I like him. Not to mention he can work on defense, He'll stand if you win an intrigue on defense and there's misinformation is out there. That's a card that you're going to get some utility out of too. And, four for five without a negative trait and a war crest, that's hard to beat. And military intrigue is always a great combination if you have to choose from a bicon. So I like it.
It's probably my favorite bicon combination, but I'm just thinking, between this guy and Jaime and Cersei, Lanny's got a lot of strength that they can throw into challenges now, win that challenge, and then throw that same strength into the next challenge. Potentially some of the clansmen plus Tyrion, the one that makes the Nelt clansmen also participate in the challenge he's in.
You can get some big strength.
Yeah. Not quite sure how to put all that together yet, but it's interesting, so...
All right. Next up, we have a Lannister event. It is Sitting the Iron Throne. It is another small council event. It is House Lannister only with Deathbound. And then any phase, pay 1 gold to choose a character to claim 1 power, limit 3 times per round. And then in addition to that, dominance, if you won dominance's phase, pay 1 gold to return Sitting the Iron Throne from your dead pile to your hand.
Fracking awesome.
And this card's really cool.
I've been dying for Lannister to have a way to just buy the throne in-game at some point. You know, to more accurately represent some of their capabilities in Westeros. And I like this. I like this a lot.
Mm-hmm. So the limit 3 times per round is sad, but
I mean,
probably needed.
Three power round is still pretty solid.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it also costs.
It takes 6 gold. Yeah. So
you've got to have a lot of gold sitting around. But I'd be looking forward to building a deck to just try to have a boatload of gold every turn.
Mm-hmm. The gold deck with Kevin Lannister and Tywin in this.
Yeah, and Daven.
Daven is who I meant.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe Den of the Wolf, I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah. Darryl, what do you think?
I absolutely like this card. Super cool. I always love any of the cards that have that little infinity symbol that have a recursion to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's very Nedley. And it's just solid. I like it. I mean, there's already intrigue rush decks sort of coming about. It'd be cool to just kind of maybe tweak those rush decks already to where they're putting out a little more gold, and so you can get an extra 1 or 2 power a turn or something. So,
and also, don't forget, it's a small council event. Mm-hmm. So that Joffrey, let's see, I think he was the Kings of the Sea Joffrey, who unless you kneel a noble to discard someone with power on them after small council event's been played.
It was the Prince of the Sun Joffrey, but
Prince of the Sun, my bad. Well, conveniently, this is both a small council event and lets you put power on any character.
Yep.
Not just yours.
So it becomes quasi-removal with them.
Uh-huh. Which could be pretty sweet. I mean, between this, which will keep recurring itself, and of course you killed the wrong dwarf, which is control and generates power, that Joffrey has a lot of good small council options to look at. That'd be another fun deck to play around with. Plus, you can give away games in Melee. You could really kingmake if you want, which may or may not be a problem. We'll find out come Worlds.
All right, as far as Sitting the Iron Throne goes, on this one, I am feeling a B, maybe a B minus, since it is expensive to really get the most use out of it.
D?
I'm going to really do something new here. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. I think that I think it really deserves the really strong B. It's a powerful card. It's not going to be in every deck, but I dig it.
Oh man, I do hate to agree with Daryl. I really do.
Me too.
We're agreeing way too much already in this pack.
Throwing all these bees at.
But I agree, this looks like a strong B to me. I think it opens up a couple new avenues to Lannister, which is great, and it's going to be pretty essential to either of those types of decks. It's not for every deck, though. I don't think, you know, just classic Hyper Neil, for instance, is going to want to mess with it. But it is way cool.
Fair enough. Will, you're up.
Okay, let's see. This sends us over Greyjoy's way, I believe, to the Raiders of Orkmond, right?
Yep.
All right, we've got a 4-cost, 5-strength army. Go figure. It's also a raider. And it has military and power icons and a war crest. And the text, if you're running a character agenda or not running an agenda, Raiders of Orkmond gains. Response, after you win a military challenge, look at the top 3 cards of the losing opponent's deck, discard up to 2 of these cards, and put the remaining cards back on top of the deck in any order.
I think this guy's pretty blah as compared to the other armies in the pack.
Blah is
a similar variety.
Maybe if there was a way to generate multiple military challenges, you know, if there was like a power behind the throne for military challenges, you know, then you could start chugging along because it doesn't require that it be in the military challenge.
Correct.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
But just kind of stripping out, you know, one or two cards from your opponent's draw every turn, it's better than strict mill, but it doesn't feel great.
No. I do dig the Warcrest, though. I love giving Greyjoys more Warcrest options for their few Warcrest events they have to take advantage of for unopposed.
Right, right. He's okay. You know, Greyjoy already has several low-cost, high-strength characters. He just, you know, maybe there's some sort of Raider mill deck that does want to go ahead and give him a shot. But it just feels like he's overshadowed by a lot of other stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. I will say that the ability to, you can discard up to two of those cards. So it's up to two and you can put them back in any order. I think that's pretty interesting. Maybe if you're running some kind of no agenda choke deck and you're wanting to, I don't know, switch the order of those to give them something that they don't need. Maybe that third card is a location that they would need some kind of income or something. But it really, I just think there's better options out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, if your opponent's running an agenda, you know, you get the giant seven strength for four cost. I don't know. It just seems like a better choice all around, but maybe not. Maybe there's a deck out there for it, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm not digging it. I'm feeling a D+, and the plus is just because he doesn't have to be in the challenge to use his ability.
Yeah. It's tough. I'm feeling right in that same area. It is better than strict mill. You can strip stuff out. You know, I know part of what made Jace the Mind Sculptor powerful in Magic way back when was kind of sculpting, so to speak, what your opponent would draw into, but he just still feels kind of blah to me. I don't think I can give him past a C.
Yeah.
Moment of truth.
Just right now, there's just not a very powerful Greyjoy deck that doesn't use an agenda that at least I can think of. At least with the, I'm just going to give him a D and just let it be at that. I just don't like this card. So let's move on.
Let's move on then. You're up.
Oh, am I up? I thought you were up.
You were the first one.
Oh, yeah, I was. Wasn't I? Great. Okay, the next one's, again, a Greyjoy location. It is two cost. It is called Deepwood Mott, and it is unique, and it has the North trait. And it reads, challenges. Kneel Deepwood Mott to discard the top three cards of an opponent's deck. Any player may discard one power from his or her house card to cancel this effect. If two or more non-character cards are discarded in this way, choose and stand a character. I'm digging that.
Almost awesome.
It's really close to really good, but instead falls short and is kind of terrible.
That discarding one power is not a great thing, we'll say.
Unless I was just like literally about to win the game, I'm pretty sure I would almost always discard the power just to keep you. Like, I care less about the mill, but the possibility of standing a character, I'd want to try to avoid.
Yeah, it's doubly conditional. Your opponent has the option to cancel it, and then it's not certain you're going to stand something anyway, depending on how the discard goes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're running Brotherhood, they sure are boned.
That is true.
Yeah, correct. All right.
Eat that, Brotherhood. We're just kicking you in the teeth every chance we get.
Yep.
I think it's still fun. I mean,
I'd still be it's interested in trying it out.
Yeah, maybe like a Greyjoy Maester deck, maybe. But aside from, I mean, yeah. just like, to really take advantage of the extra standing.
Yeah, man, too bad it's challenges only. Otherwise, yeah. Maesters could get way more use out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, with Steel Link, if you do luck out with it, you can get some extra use out of the character a couple times.
Yeah. And at that point, you know, the extra mill, too, at that point, it's possibly 6 cards mill to turn. If you're already looking at doing some of the other mill stuff, that is going to add up pretty quickly.
Yeah. I'm still not feeling
it. I mean, it's pretty tough to get into that that 2-cost location slot for Greyjoy as is, but I would be very interested in trying it. I mean, potential stand, pretty great. Stand is hard to come by.
All right, so I'm going to go out on a limb with a rating first here this time.
Okay.
I'm still going to give it a try, I'm going to say, but looking at it from the opposite side of the table, I agree with Zyler that I think I'm going to be willing to discard that power 9 out of 10 times to stop a stand from happening. So I'm giving it like a D.
I'm going to echo that D. It's not quite bad enough to be F material, but if it just had that one little parenthesis not there, it'd be a freaking spectacular card. As is, it leaves a lot to be desired. Ooh, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to one up you punks.
And give
I'm
it giving a B, it
a B. That's right. I'm giving it a B. Yeah. I'm serious. Potential stand, and if you guys are going to discard power off your house all day, that's fine. I'm going to find some ways to stand my location and try to get more use out of it. I dig it. I'll give it a shot for sure. And you get that mill in there, and that's going to work with Asha and Alanis. Mm-hmm. You want to try and get those non-character cards in their discard pile. So I'm digging.
Fair enough. Moving on.
Yep.
Next up, well, we have a Greyjoy attachment. It is Seized. It's 2-cost, as it has the condition trait, and then attached to a non-unique, non-limited location. Take control of attached location and discard all other attachments attached to it.
This looks cool.
Really? I think it's pretty bland.
Really?
This card is titties.
I think there's definitely locations floating around that are going to be worth seizing.
Oh, there's a ton of them. They're pretty much all unique, unfortunately.
No, there's a ton of non-unique ones that are floating around. Pentoshi Manager?
That's the end of the list that comes to mind.
Really? You don't think you'd want to take a Golden Tooth Mines?
Nah, fair enough.
You don't think you'd want to take 2 influence away from a Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck and steal the King's Road?
I mean,
wouldn't be interested in taking a Scouting Vessel from Greyjoy?
I mean, no one to play Scouting Vessel.
Really? I still like Scouting Vessel.
I haven't seen one in literally years.
You just haven't seen me playing
Greyjoy? I mean, hell. yeah, and if you're running Greyjoy Choke, maybe you're going to... You know, take some of their income providing locations.
As long as they're unlimited.
Non-limited.
Yeah.
How many of those are out there?
If you're playing Greyjoy Choke, if you take even a street, Seized is essentially paying for itself because you take 1 gold from them and essentially gain a gold yourself, which washes, in my mind, the 2-cost right there.
I'm not a huge fan.
It's not amazing, but would I be tempted to throw in a copy or two in a lot of Greyjoy decks? And certainly a Greyjoy Black Sails deck. Yeah.
I can see that. To tutor for it if you have targets.
Yep.
And it's some spot location control. I like it.
Yep. I mean, and there's other options. I can't think of the name now. What's the Bera one that gives someone +2 in stealth and a power challenge that gets played a ton?
Smuggler's Cove.
Yes.
Thank you. Still, I don't think that card gets played a ton. That's another one that I haven't seen.
All right. Well, let's move it on then. What do you guys want to give it as far as a letter grade?
I mean, it's a take control effect. Those are always good. And I'm talking over Brett. I'm definitely giving C's to B.
I will give it a C-, and that's because I'm feeling generous today. I think this card, it's a big flashy effect, but I don't think it will stand out overall.
I mean, it gives me a similar vibe to Burned and Pillaged. You know, you're not going to see it in every deck, but it definitely has some... I really like the ability. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. I was joking earlier about giving everything a B, but...
But now he's just going to do
B
it.
A B for me is a card that I think is very good, but it's just not going to make it into every deck that I build. I like it.
Fair enough. Moving on, William. Get us started on these bear cards.
It's me already? Man, it just comes back around so fast. Well, we're going to take a look at the Black Crown Knights this time. This is, once again, 4 cost, 5 strength, military and power army. It's also a knight and House Tyrell. It has a Warcrest and the standard, if you are running a character agenda or not running an agenda, Black Crown Knights gains. Response, after you win a power challenge, which Black Crown Knights participated, discard 1 card from your hand to have Black Crown Knights claim 2 power.
It's better than the Raiders of Orkmont.
Yep, I'll give it that.
I don't know. It has anti-synergy with the Laughing Storm, which I think is one of Bear's key cards. I mean, really, and again, Bear is a house that they are doing better than I would have expected if you'd asked me 3 months ago how they're going to be doing in the regional season. But I still think that Bear is one of the houses that really needs an agenda in order to overcome some of their inherent weaknesses.
Agreed. Draw being the main thing. And this effectively, in that case, is like double anti-draw, right? You're passing up a draw agenda, and you're chucking a card.
Discarding extra cards to claim power.
Yeah. Now, it is cool with Melisandre's scheme, but I don't know if that's enough to make up for it.
I did also want to point out that this is, at least so far of the armies we've seen, it's the only one that requires him to be in the challenge in order to trigger the effect, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's a bummer. If he didn't have to be in the challenge, I would actually be much more interested in looking at it. Especially, you know, because... I'm thinking about melee, you know, if people were making incoming power challenges at you and you were somehow able to defend them and, you know, chuck cards and keep claiming power, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Really, they might actually be worse than the Raiders of Orkmont now that I'm really looking at them.
Yeah, there's less card intent and resource intensive ways to gain power at the 4-cost slot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at least the Raiders of Orkmont does give you some kind of control option, even if it's a little flimsier than a lot of others. So I'm probably giving the Black Crown Knights like a D, with the caveat that once some of the command stuff comes out in King's Road, this may get better because it'll give you a chance to trade cards.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo the D on this guy. He's just lackluster.
It sucks so bad that you have to discard a card from your hand to get that gone. Unfortunately, there's just not enough right now out of Bear to not run an agenda, except for these guys as of right now, I think, and so I'm also going to have to give him or there's that Shireen that does something obscure. I'm going to have to give them a D as well.
Yeah, though another thought occurs to me. He has another way to chuck cards out of my hand from my recursion deck.
That's true.
The and he's an army. Cheaper. Oh, he is an army himself, yep.
Doesn't that recursion deck require an agenda, though?
No. I mean, it doesn't require one. Do I probably want one? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Daryl, you're up again.
All right. Next is Dale Seaworth, bear card. He's unique, 3 cost, 2 strength, military power, with a naval enhancement on that power icon. He is a captain, and he has Joust, and he reads response. After Dale Seaworth enters play or leaves play, choose and return 1 bear card from your discard pile to your hand.
I'm calling it now. This guy's the card of the pack.
That is a sweet ability, even if he is neither a knight nor an army for that mm-hmm. particular deck of mine. That's just a sweet ability.
Yep.
Yeah, I like how it's whether he enters play or leaves play. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get double use out of this guy.
Much like him. The Prince's Bannermen, which turns out are some good yeah. and get disgusting with recursive effects. Dale gives some sweet possibilities there. Of course, he's only Baratheon cards, and I just mm-hmm. want to point out yeah. to people that does not include House Baratheon only events
yeah.
which are what I would really wish I could get back.
Do some see you with stronger action.
Oh yeah, totally. Or Glamour of Fire mm-hmm. is another one that I'd love yeah. to loop with him. Unfortunately, I can't. But there's still solid choices. Even just as simple as Seat of Power.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, if he uses Seat of Power for him, he's free, and then he gets you a card back when he leaves play.
Yep.
This guy, I'm giving him an A-, for the only reason I'm doing that is because his response can be canceled, and that would make me sad.
It can be canceled, but not every card can be Mira with some freakish, rule-breaking, mind-bending ability. So I'm just giving Dale a solid A. He's going to be a big boon for Brady.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Dale's excellent. I really wish he had like stealth or something, but that ability is really awesome. I am also going to give Dale an A. He's going to make it into a ton of decks. I really like him.
Oh, I can't imagine a bear deck that honestly probably wouldn't play three of them.
Three? I mean, if he does die, though, which is going to be the most common way he leaves play, then you've got a couple blanks.
I don't know. I've been looking at a shy initiate recently for more recursion with Melisandre's schemes, and he just helps that out more, and then just moves him back into the discard pile.
Yeah, the initiate is cool. Touche. And then you can play another Dale after you've moved him
mm-hmm.
and get potentially two more of those cards back yep. out of there. Yeah, I don't know if I would always play three, but definitely one for sure. Yeah,
that may have been a little overzealous of me. One or two in pretty much every bear deck.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, still in Barra, a location this time, a zero-cost location specifically, Shores of the Blackwater. It is a King's Landing card, and it has the text challenges. If you have won a challenge by four or more total strength this phase, kneel and discard Shores of the Blackwater from play to choose a character in your dead pile killed this phase. Return that character to your hand.
Dale!
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even just have to be Dale. There's a lot of stuff. Even, once again, you know, that army deck could use it, or even like just a standard Martell deck I could see wanting to use this if they're using, say, you know, the Viper's Bannerman as their restricted card. This only costs 2 gold out of house, even. Win a challenge by 4, and it does not require that it be a Barra card you bring back mm-hmm. or anything. You pop a Bannerman back in and get even more cards. I mean, anything with comes into play ability is going to be sweet with it. Just any threat character, even. It doesn't have to be it comes into play ability, but just mm-hmm. when your opponent thinks yeah. it's gone,
bring it right back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really liking this card.
Oh yeah, zero cost, great on setup, out mm-hmm. of Baratheon. Gives them some very nice staying power as long as they can win at least one challenge after a character's left play.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, you can win the challenge by 4 or more before the character leaves play and then trigger this later in the phase. Yeah, it's not a responsive challenge.
Oh, touche. I was thinking it was a response at first.
It is absolutely not a response.
Teach me to read that. Yeah. Oh, that does make things much more interesting. You could be first player, attack, win something big.
By 4 or more, then Shores of Blackwater is primed and ready.
Yeah, exactly. Then your opponent's got to decide. You know, say you're playing against, I don't know, Stark Murder or something. You throw like an 8-strength power challenge at him that gets through. Whatever, it goes to them, then they've got to decide, is it worth playing that Die by the Sword mm-hmm. and killing Robert when he can just discard the Shores and
right
immediately
back.
Bring him back? Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Bear is looking like it gets a big boost this pack.
You got a big boost just with these two cards.
I mean, a much needed boost. Now this card's pretty rad. The fact that, you know, at first I was thinking you have to win a challenge by four or more, but the great thing about it is it's not like win a power challenge or
win a military challenge. Yeah, win any challenge on a pack war defense.
So that's going to make this card way more playable.
And Dale gets it back.
Yep.
Yep. Dale gets it back.
Heck, this plus Dale can loop some other Bera card pretty much infinitely.
Yeah, infinite times.
Oh, yeah, this is cool. I've got to give this. It's maybe not as instant splashable. Like, I don't think I just want to run a copy in every Bera deck like Dale, but I'm giving this, like, a strong B. B plus, I think.
I was thinking B plus as well. It's not quite it doesn't have quite the impact as Dale because there are some requirements there. It's not just as soon as it happens, or as soon as you play it, it happens. Right. But it's really strong.
And it's not a character that can participate in challenges. Yeah. And such. Though it does help on setup, so maybe that part's a wash. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and give it a B. I definitely think that Dale, just after seeing Dale and then you see this card, he just complements it so well. Give it a B.
All right. Back around to me already?
It is.
How do I always get these armies?
Every third card.
We're over to Stark with Riders of Carhold. It's a 4-cost, 5-strength, military and power, Warcrest army. It's also a traitor, which is very interesting, and House Karstark. It has the usual text, yada yada yada, gains. Response, after you win a military challenge, reveal the top card of your deck. If it is a character, add it to your hand, otherwise return it to the top of your deck. I dig this one.
I really like this guy.
Great card advantage for you, though it's in a really tough cost slot in Stark. You know, it's directly up against Northern Cavalry Flank on stats, icons, and crest. And even with that ability, I think it loses to the flank.
I don't know. So like I was saying earlier, Stark No Agenda is probably the only house I play No Agenda out of, and it helps with that even more.
It does. I mean, if you've got room to run three of this and three cavalry flanks, I mean that's going to be a sweet setup. It is interesting. I think this is finally one of the support cards that I think we've needed to get to go along with Stalwart that doesn't just straight up use Stalwart like a trait or something, but just interacts positively with the way Stalwart works. So I like that.
Mm. Yeah, I really like him. I like him more so as far as No Agenda versus the Cavalry Flank. If running No Agenda is going to become a thing, that these guys, you're absolutely going to want to hit them over the cavalry flank. Now, granted, I love Northern Cavalry Flank, but these guys, you can control this, whereas the cavalry flank, you have to rely on your opponent running an agenda. Mm-hmm. And I know as the meta is right now, everyone runs an agenda, but in the future, if not running agenda becomes a thing, these guys are going to be the card to have. Unconditional card advantage, well, I mean, it's conditional, but I just think that's excellent. Just like, hey, let me reveal a top card. Oh, it's an event. That's cool. Just goes on top.
And, you know, yeah, it's great that you don't lose it. Like,
yeah,
I mean, and the normal deck building ratios mean that this triggers roughly 50% of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it gets around the draw cap. So, I don't know. I'm okay with that. It doesn't have to be in the challenge. You could win a military on defense and after the riders are knelt, and still get to trigger it, so it could be done multiple times a phase.
Yep, if you have multiples of them, you can trigger every one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe throw in a couple epic battles.
He'll start getting crazy once you throw multiples out there. Oh, yeah. If you want to try out some kind of Stark deck without Siege, but using epic battles, you could get a ton of card advantage out of that.
Yep.
I really dig the Riders.
Oh, yeah. So I'm gonna jump out here and say that I'm gonna give him a B minus. I'm really not sure why I'm giving him a B minus. It just feels like a B is too bland for them. I mean, and probably mostly because of the fact that if you aren't running no agenda, then I would never, absolutely ever run them.
Right, right. And I guess that's the thing, keeping them in line. I kind of want to give them, I want to give them a B, but because they have to fit into that very specific thing. Or, of course, let's not neglect, they work with the Kindly Man.
Fair enough.
Who is pretty decent and yeah. could potentially bring him back out of the discard or dead if something happens. But, geez. They only work in that very specific deck. Yeah, B minus. I was debating about going down to a C, but that card advantage is really rad. Oh, and a quick update from Greg, who just sent me a text. Dale Seaworth is an A, is all he said. So, not really sure how he knew that it was the right time for that, or really close. But wow. Well done, sir.
Dale, what do you think?
These guys, honestly, I want to give them a B. I think they're really rad, but because they have the traitor trait, which I know is not really that big of a deal right now, but I just don't, I'm just afraid of that. Four cost for a possible discard is not fun for me. So I'm, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to give them a C. I do think they're cool. I think they have a niche in the no agenda Stark deck, but I'm still going to give him a C just for having that trait.
All right. Moving on. Darrell.
Moving on. Hang on a sec. Sorry. All righty. Next, we have an event. It is Passing the Wall. It is a House Stark only event, and it reads, any phase, put a Night's Watch character into play from your hand, then draw one card. At the end of the phase, if that character is still in play, return it to your hand.
Man, I wish Night's Watch was better.
Yeah.
Nobody wishes that more than me, buddy.
I mean, it could surprise people more than the actual wall location.
Oh, yeah.
So
it does cantrip and replace itself.
Right. And that's, you know, that's okay.
That's not enough.
It's going to be a surprise. At least it doesn't have to be on defense. You could drop in a surprise attacker of some kind. I'm not quite sure yet what shenanigans you could get up to with it being any phase, but there might be something.
I'm sure. Something eventually. I know there's a new Jon Snow coming out in the next cycle that may make this card a little better, but right now I'm just not feeling it. I can't think of any Night's Watch characters I'd really want to just jump into play.
There's Benjen. Maybe not. yeah. I think it's a neat idea. And I like the Night's Watch agendas. They're cool, but they're just not competitive right now. So.
Yeah. Night's Watch. Still not quite there.
I'm not sure if they'll ever be there.
So. Give it a D.
Okay. It replaces itself, so I'm not going to give it an F. I'm also going to give it a D.
I was kind of surprised. I thought Daryl was going to go with a B.
I mean, he's going to give a couple lowers out. Mostly Bs.
Yeah.
I'm also going to echo the deal, though, Will. I did just think of a cool use of the any phase. You can any phase in Old Bear Mormont, the plot phase, to cancel a plot when revealed effect.
Right, but you'd have to do it before the plots are actually revealed.
You would, yeah.
You could also any phase in the, Steward of the Watch that discards a card from hand when he comes into play?
Yeah.
You could any phase him in... post-draw to discard something, you know, if you've got your opponent's hand stripped down or something like that. But...
Yeah, no, still a D.
Yeah.
Maybe lower. Maybe a D-.
It replaces itself.
It does replace itself.
I won't go D-. So, okay.
I think I'm going to go D-. Just because it replaces itself doesn't mean that I still wouldn't rather just have a good card in my deck.
What's up next here, then?
Next we'll up on. Is Host of the Bone Way. It's Will, I'm reading this army this time.
Well, see, this one's not a military power, so...
Oh, true. So, Host of the Bone Way, again, it is one of the 4-cost, 5-strength armies with a war crest. This one is also House Uller, and it has a military and intrigue icon. Yada, yada, yada. Host of the Bone Way gains response after you win an intrigue challenge. Reveal the top card of your deck. If it is an event card, add it to your hand. Otherwise, return it to the top of your deck. You know, for being so similar to the Riders of Carhold, he is so much worse.
Yeah, he really is. You're going to trigger this one roughly a quarter of the time, comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
And events actually lose quite a bit of their value once your opponent sees them.
Yeah.
Now, depending on what the events are, I suppose, in Martell, maybe the intimidation factor pays off. If they know you're sitting on a Red Wedding...
Red Vengeance.
Red Vengeance. I don't know where I got Red Wedding just now. My apologies. Thinking of plots or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't dig these guys nearly as much as I dug the other ones. Just because I feel like an event, you know, has to have that surprise factor. Maybe not every time, but out of any house, you know, I feel like Martell does run, you know, the most lethal events, I feel, the most painful events, and it would be nice to add those to your hand, but right now, that's not a big enough incentive to not run an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it stinks that Martell can run one of the types of decks that would, you know, up those odds of drawing an event to, I don't know, 30% of the time, maybe 40% of the time if someone was feeling really crazy in some kind of Knights of Hollow Hill build.
But then you're not using them.
Yeah, exactly, but then the host doesn't work. So it doesn't quite feel like it gets there for me. It's still card advantage, so I don't want to rate it abysmally, but I'm feeling like a D+.
Honestly, I'm feeling a D- again because I'm in a generous mood. I was considering F, honestly.
F? Now, come on. This isn't Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken quality.
It's not that bad, but it is not a card that I would ever put in a deck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to give it a D. Just, it's tough to get into that 4-cost range for Martell, like, as far as a potent enough card to put in that slot. So, nope, not doing it. D.
All right. Up to me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we've got a Martell warship. The Greenblood Vessel appears to be a pole boat, judging by the art.
That's a fierce warship.
Uh-huh.
Dude, that's a warship, man.
Response. After an opponent declares a challenge against you, kneel Greenblood Vessel to choose a character you control. Till the end of the phase, that character gains an icon of your choice.
I think this card's pretty cool.
It's very defensive.
It is very defensive. That is true.
Could be cool for that Martell Stonewall deck of mine. You can always fill whatever icon gap you have.
And it is cool that it's not like you have to win a challenge before you can do it. It's as soon as they declare an attacker.
Right.
You can use it to turn a guy that couldn't defend into a guy that could defend.
Mm-hmm. Which is very nice. You know, I just wish it had some offensive capabilities, some way to take icons or something. Only granting them is still a lot less versatile.
I really dig this card. I really, really like it. I think in Melee, it's also just going to be bonkers awesome.
It can potentially be real cool in Melee, yeah.
So, I really like this card.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a C for this one, honestly.
Could be nice on those two Spears turns.
Yeah, since you're probably losing initiative anyway, gives your guys that aren't kneeling the extra icon.
Mm-hmm.
Looks well with like a Harmon Oler, give him an intrigue icon if you're still running that old guy.
Yep. Depending on whether you have an agenda or not, you know, can work with Arch and what's his name? Well, what was the name of the other guy?
Can't say. Sergaris Drinkwater.
Ah, Drink. Yeah, Arch and Drink. Not nearly as good a nicknames as Dunk and Egg.
No, they are not.
Yeah, it's alright, but doesn't impress me a ton. I'm feeling like a C-.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a B because it has the potential. Yeah, I know, right? I'm considering giving it an A because you can give the Southron Mercs a power icon and you can give Ariane Martell a military icon, which is just titties galore. That is excellent. But I'll stick with my B. I really like this card.
Daryl getting passionate about the icon, granted.
He is.
I love giving icons. Love it.
All right, speaking of things you love doing, Daryl, why don't you read the next card?
All right, moving on. This is another Martell location. It's zero cost. It is Shores of the Summer Sea. It has the Dorn trait. It reads, response, after you lose a challenge, kneel Shores of the Summer Sea to choose two cards in your discard pile, shuffle those cards back into your hand, then rip this card back up and never play it again.
Back into your deck. So it's even worse than what you actually said.
Yeah. It sure will help you against Baylor Black Tide.
It actually will. Baylor and potentially Alanis and Asha, depending on how early in the game it is, which I dig. If you can zip through your deck fast enough, that's going to really start impacting your draws as the game goes. Because this doesn't discard itself. It works when you lose a challenge at all, attack or defense. If you can find a way to discard a huge chunk of your deck, and zip through it really fast. I mean, I like
the correct answer there is the new Ario Hota.
Right. That too.
There
you go. Chuck the whole thing and then just start getting the same two red vengeances back as you draw turn after turn after turn. Or whatever it is you may want to get.
I don't know. It's pretty lackluster overall.
Really? Man, I really dig it.
Yeah. I'm not digging. I guess it'd be cool if you had a lot of search and something that was in your discard pile that you could just search out by putting it back in your deck. But as of right now, I just don't see the applications for it.
I mean, if you do, deck yourself out, and then you have two red vengeances that you can keep recurring every single turn, that's one thing, but I don't think that's going to happen in most games. If you do build a deck that is designed to discard itself.
Different idea. Deck yourself, have two holy characters in play, bam, two confessions every turn.
There you go.
No.
Which means strip your opponent's hand. Just a thought. I don't know. I highly value repeatable recursion cards. So I'm giving Shores of the Summer Sea a B. It's going to take a little work, so I don't want to put it in the A range. Not quite certain about B+, but definitely a solid B.
Yeah, I think this might be the first card of the pack that we have a big disagreement on, because I'm going to give it a D.
Yeah. Yep, I'm also going to give it a D. I just don't see it. I hope I'm wrong. Show me something cool with this card.
Recursion back into deck is so much worse than recursion into hand.
Well, yeah.
And Martell already has some recursion into hand effects.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yep.
Next up, we are into Targ cards. This is a Targ character, 3-cost, Dothraki Outrider. It is 3 strength with a military and a power icon. It has the Dothraki trait, obviously. It also has stealth, and then Dothraki Outrider gains renown during power challenges.
Sweet.
Yeah, this is just a pretty solid dude.
He is just a great French vanilla, as they say, card. I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's pretty fun. There are a couple ways to stand Dothraki, aren't there? Right? So maybe some synergy with the Iron Throne. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, he's all right. He's not bad.
He's all right. I mean,
no, he's definitely not bad.
Stealth is already cool. I mean, even without anything else, just that solid 3-for-3, 2 icons with stealth and no negative traits has me intrigued. Mm-hmm. But you throw in renown on half of his challenges.
Yeah.
I mean, that plus the stealth means he's probably generating you 2 power a turn, plus claim, probably 3 power a turn. I mean, this is in Targ, which is traditionally a very slow house, unless it's pretty dedicated, like Dragon Rush. This Outrider could speed up your average Targ deck a lot.
Yep.
Without having to be all that crazy or have a ton of text or anything complicated. I love him. I'm giving him B plus.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give him a B minus because I mean he doesn't just jump out at me as spectacular. I mean he is definitely an all around solid character. There's not really a fault with him aside from the fact that he's just not spectacular.
Yeah.
He's just a workhorse. A really solid workhorse.
And he will do work for you.
Yeah. I mean, he's decent. He'll work well with, like, long lances if you're doing, like, some Air to the Iron Throne jazz or whatever. He seems all right. I'm just going to give him a C.
Fun idea.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is just that 3-cost slot is just really crowded over there in Targaryen right now. So he's a decent card. I'll give him a C.
All right.
Fair enough. Now, Will, I know you were really concerned that I read that last army. But no, here's another one for you.
Well, yeah.
And it is military power.
Yeah, I wanted to point this out. All of the other houses, the army is the first card for that house in the pack. But when it gets around to Targ and, like, our rotation would throw it off, suddenly the Targ military power army is the second one.
I mean, in a lot of the other ones, it was the only character, and then in Bera is the only one that had multiple characters, and it's in alphabetical order.
Yeah. Whatever. It's just weird that it worked out this way.
Although, actually, with the alphabetical order, it actually should be before Dothraki Outrider, so well, I didn't realize its name was Braided Screamers.
Weird, huh? Somebody is pulling one on me. Damon!
That's right.
Love it. Read us up, Will.
Yeah, Braided Screamers. 4-for-5, military power, Warcrest, army Dothraki, yada yada, Braided Screamers gain. Response, after you play a Dothraki character of cost 3 or more, search the top 5 cards of your deck for a Dothraki character, reveal it, and add it to your hand, then shuffle your deck. OMG, this guy is probably the best out of these armies. That is an agenda worthy ability right there, I think.
I'm not convinced they're better than the Riders of Carhold. They're comparable.
If you're already building a Dothraki-themed deck, I guess I'll specify. You do have to skew the deck that direction, but you're digging 5 cards deep, which means if you skewed that direction, you're almost certainly finding a Dothraki. He's going to trigger off of himself when you play him. Those nice Outriders we just saw are going to trigger him.
That's true. Yeah, all the Queensguard Dothraki, Drogo, and Drogo Sword are the ones that are going to trigger.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is a bummer that the Drogo that sees the most play, the bouncing one,
will
not
trigger. Yeah, won't work, but I don't know. In dedicated Dothraki decks, I feel like the one that searches out extra Dothraki is probably the best option.
Right. Which actually may be a little less good with the Braided Screamers, because then you're stripping...
Because you're cleaning them out of the deck.
Yeah.
The Drogo doesn't really mesh well with them. The two best ones.
But
I would agree. Great. The ability's awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty rad. What are we giving it, boys?
I like it a lot. I'm giving this one a B+.
Daryl?
I'll go ahead and give it a B. Just, man, searching the top 5,
of your deck is just awesome, especially if you're doing a lot of Dothraki shenanigans, obviously, since you have to grab a Dothraki character.
Staying power is what it felt like they lacked to me. I'd just dominate the board for the first few turns until there was a reset and then kind of fall apart. And I think Braided Screamers will do a lot to offset that.
Braided Screamers does help a lot. I'm leaning towards a C+, honestly. I'm just not feeling the B with them because I think at least, I mean, Targ in general and Dothraki decks specifically, one of their big weaknesses is similar to Bera, their piss poor draw capabilities. And while he does give you usually superior draw, search for more Dothraki characters, you do have to have them in play, and you do have to have more Dothraki in your hand to trigger them. So I'm just not feeling a B for them.
All right.
Damn. 4 for 5 with a Warcrest, though. Oh, I like it.
Nothing wrong with their stats. I'm not complaining about that in the slightest.
Moving on?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Next up, another Targ card. It is Port at Slaver's Bay. It is a unique location that is cost 0. It has the East trait, and it reads, Marshalling, Neil Port at Slaver's Bay to lower the cost of the next attachment. You play this phase by 1. By 2 instead if it is an out-of-house attachment. How fun.
Yeah, this is a really fun card.
This could spawn a new archetype of some kind. Not sure what off the top of my head. I'd have to really do some time studying all the attachments in the game. But there's probably something here. A lot of splash potential.
Yeah, true.
Not really good House of Dreams bait, sadly.
No, that's what I was about to say. I wish it did cost more, so that if I use it with House of Dreams, I wouldn't feel like I was wasting so much.
Well, not just wasting, but if people are running,
they'll just nuke it. They can do their first plot and it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, no, it's a really cool card. I just don't feel like it's going to be. I just don't see a new archetype being defined by a zero cost unique location. That doesn't have any kind of like control effects. Yeah, all it does is let you play some more cards for a little cheaper.
Potentially, I don't know. It would be neat to run a Targ deck that played like Enslaved or Seized or Burned and Pillaged. I could see some ability there, but you have to be dedicated, making sure you're going to get these guys out there. But that seems really, really fun.
That actually would be kind of entertaining to be in the slaving stuff, because then, you know, if anything happens to the attachment, you can kill off. Or even if you kill off that character, you can probably just recur the Enslaved and play it again and take something else. I mean, that could be an engine right there. Just
how would you recur? Fair. I was confused. I was saying that you're stealing the attachment. Sorry.
No. Sorry.
Yeah, you're building into the deck with this. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That is pretty cool. Like I said, I just don't see. Just it being unique honestly hurts it a lot, I think.
Yeah. I mean, a very similar effect to this was available in the CCG days that was not unique.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a little bit different in that it was lower by 1 and ignore the out-of-house
penalty. Oh.
Yeah, so it was effectively -3 if it was an out-of-house card. So it was slightly better there and non-unique, and that defined the game for a while. Targ just played anything and everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff like that, stuff similar to Devious Intentions and things of that nature. They could do a lot. So this is toned down a lot, but I think there's potential.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm feeling I'm feeling a C, honestly. It's a really neat card, a really fun card, and if I ever do build up that King Viserys deck, it will be in that deck absolutely.
Oh yeah, totally.
But I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be particularly impactful.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go ahead and give it a C, just because I really, yeah, like, it's going to have to be in kind of a niche deck, I think, you know. Flame Kiss is really the only attachment out of Targ that sees a lot of play, and that guy's ambushed in 80% of the time, so it gets a C, but I, you know, with disdain, I give it this C, because I think there is a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun to be had with this card.
Yeah, I really shouldn't agree with Daryl like that, but I think I'm in kind of a similar boat. There's a lot of fun to be had, lots of neat ideas, but I'll just kind of have to see how it plays out and see what all is available a little more. So I'm gonna play it safe and give it a C for the moment.
Fair enough. Moving on to a card that has been spoiled for a little while now. It is the new European Melee Champions card from 2011, Marjorie Tyrell. She is 3 cost, 3 strength, intrigue power. She is both House Baratheon and Lannister. She is a lady. She's a queen. She is of House Tyrell. She has a text: while any opponent controls a lady or queen character, Marjorie Tyrell gains melee. And response: after Marjorie Tyrell is knelt as an attacker, choose and kneel a character controlled by the defending player. Then that character is participating in this challenge as a defender. Limit once per phase.
God. Hey. She's good.
She's good, definitely.
Crazy good. Crazy good.
I'm not sure if I'd say crazy good. She's definitely good.
She's pretty solid. I mean, I'm going to run her in most all of the Lanny or Baratheon decks I build.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite all, but most.
Yeah, I mean, oh, man, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, she has really cool synergies. I mean, honestly, I mean, the best way to probably use her is with Deadly, you know, switch, pop someone into the challenge that they wouldn't want to lose.
Oh, totally.
And then Deadly it up.
Yeah, I think anything. I mean, I think, you know, this is helping pave the way for the Lanny deck that wants to go first. You know, Martell, or I'm not Martell, but Baratheon, they like to go first a lot of the time. Lanny, this is giving you another reason to go first. Oh, you've got a northern cavalry flank? Awesome. Let me attack, and then now this cavalry flank is participating. Even though it doesn't have an intrigue icon, I'm intriguing you with your northern cavalry flank and with my Marjorie Tyrell. That is just awesome.
You do realize that they're defending.
They're defending. I'm sorry. But regardless, you're still finding a way to kneel that guy. I just think it's just crazy good. Sorry. I was on another train of thought. It is a long night. But still, just the fact that you can just kneel this guy out is just... Ah, oh, man, that is just excellent. She doesn't have to be attacking alone. Ah,
the fact that she kneels out something that, even if it doesn't have the right icons, is actually really cool.
Yeah. Super good.
She's a really cool card. I wish Arrogant Contender was this good.
I think we all wish Arrogant Contender was that good.
Yeah.
But she can attack... Oh, wait, never mind. Arrogant Contender has to be attacking alone.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, see, if she worked with Arrogant Contender, that would be so sweet. You think you can get Damon to put out an errata to drop the attacking alone on him?
Probably not.
Damn. What if we start like a poll? Like a change.org petition.
There we go.
Let's do it, guys. When we're done recording this episode, let's do it.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
There we go. It's going up.
Yeah. As far as this card goes, Marjorie Tyrell's a pretty solid B.
Yeah. I'm tempted to give her like an A minus. I mean, 90% of the Lanny decks I run are going to want her because she's a solid control card. Just not, you know, some kind of power behind the throne's rush. Baratheon's a little iffier. Kind of depends on how that Baratheon deck wants to go, since they lean more in the rush direction anyway. But I think I'm still going to give her a B minus.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, did I say B minus? I meant A minus.
Yeah, A. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said A.
I'm still just going to give her an A. That, I mean, going up against an opponent who is who's trying to come at you with characters that don't kneel to attack, and if you're getting the jump on there, it's just, ah, man, I just love this card. She's really, really good. So, sticking with the A.
Fair enough. William?
Oh, man, it's to me again already? It rotates around so fast.
Every third card.
I know. All right, so I've got Blazewater Bay here. It's a zero-cost location. It's Greyjoy and Stark, the North trait, and Marshalling, kneel and discard Blazewater Bay to lower the cost of the next card you play this phase with a naval enhancement by 2, and it has 1 influence. I mean, it's a naval C, and it turns out Cs are essentially auto-includes in every deck that can possibly use them.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're playing a dedicated, I mean, really a black sails deck will play this. And I'm not sure if much else would, because it is a lot more limited than a regular C.
Yes, yeah, it is indeed, but it's super cool for these houses to have an extra C. Ah, man, more limited. How many do you think you would need in the deck to justify playing it? Because, you know, like, I look at it similarly to something like Street of Silk.
Yeah, where, it's similar to a Street.
Yeah. Where even though people may not have an entirely unique deck, they'll still play Street of Silk. So what, half of the characters? A third of the characters?
I mean, probably a third to half of my characters. If I have that many with naval enhancements, it's kind of a no-brainer. Any less than that, and I'd be a little wary.
Yeah. It's some good. Even at a third of the characters in the deck being reduced. Great on setup, which is something.
It is great on setup, and if you have a use for the influence, that might make it a little more, make me a little more likely to run it if I didn't quite have, you know, a full third of the deck as naval characters.
Yeah, that's gravy. Not a ton of great ways to use the influence in Greyjoy, unless you want to dig out the old Salt Wife. Stark, not a lot's coming to mind off the top of my head.
Retreat.
Guilty, if you want to pull something out of the core set.
Dude, Hall of Dragons. No?
Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, not too bad. No. I still want to dig it, though. I'm throwing a B at it.
Really?
There's so many Bs floating around.
We're so generous.
It's, like you said, it's not quite as good as the regular Cs, but it's still pretty good in my book.
I'm going to give it a D+, because if I had a use for the influence, I could maybe see running it. If I had, you know, a third or less than a third of my character in my deck with naval enhancements. If I have more than that, it's gravy, but that's a really dedicated, pretty much just a black sails deck. And really, I can't imagine playing this outside of a black sails deck until we get a lot more naval enhancement characters over the next course of the next couple of years, maybe.
Yeah, I probably won't even run it in a black sails deck personally. I just see the C's as it is from my perspective is, yeah, there's decks where I'm going to run 3, but I'm sorry, I will never want to run 6 C's in my deck. I guess unless I was doing some kind of dual house alliance action type of thing and I really needed it, but I'm just going to give it a D. I mean, I realize what it's there for, but I there's just not enough support for that right now. There's not enough cards to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, yeah. Moving on, D. I'm done.
Fair enough.
Alrighty, next up we have Blackwater Rush. It is a Targ/Lannister location. It is zero cost. It is a King's Landing location, which is neat.
It reads, challenges, Neil Blackwater Rush to choose a character with a naval enhancement. Until the end of that phase, that character gains deadly, or until the end of the phase, I should say.
I mean, deadly plus naval is real cool. Though yeah, these houses neat. Have considerably less deadly, or sorry, considerably less naval.
Yeah, and plus the Lannister or Navy, their big fleet already has printed deadly.
Right. Kind of a bummer there. But still, I mean, like you were talking about throwing deadly in on Margaery and mm-hmm. being one of the best uses. Like, this is a great use of naval. Arguably the best use of the naval keyword is to pop in deadly when people aren't thinking about mm-hmm. it and just knock off characters. Zero cost, solid on setup. Yeah, it's real cool.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm not feeling it as a spectacular card by any stretch of the imagination.
I feel a little less attached to it than I did to the pseudo C a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very cool.
It's all right. It's a way to give sure is a way to give some deadly. I will say that, but. Again, I'm just not huge, I guess, on a lot of naval cards yet. So if there are more naval cards, as far as characters go, then yeah, I'd probably play a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Underrated.
And these two houses are ones that, like we were saying earlier, there's not a ton of navy in these houses at this time, at least.
Yeah.
So yeah. So, I mean, at this time, I'm feeling another D on this one. You know, the next pack, there could be 10 new naval Lannister cards, and that could change my mind drastically, but both those houses need some more options before it gets good enough to see a lot of play.
Damn, I hate when you make valid points like that. I'm gonna have to give it like a D plus just based on the low number of available characters, but the instant there's more, it's gonna get cool.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and give it a C actually, because for zero cost, you know, who's to say you wouldn't run it out of house, you know, pay 2 gold for some deadly coming out of one of the houses that are a bit stronger out of their naval characters. That, you know, and deadly, like I said, I feel like it's a little bit underrated, and so I'll give it a C.
Fair enough. Last card in the pack. It is a plot. It is King's Landing Coup. It is 4 gold, 8 initiative, 1 claim. It is a power struggle and a city plot. With the text, if you have no other city plots in your used pile, reveal the top card of your deck and add it to your hand every time you win a challenge as the defender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like it just fine.
I like it quite a bit.
Mostly for the power struggle, a little bit there.
Power struggle. I mean, the stats are freaking solid.
The stats are really good. 4-8-1. It's no 4-5-1.
It's no 4-5-1. It That's might true. Arguably be better.
Yeah.
But how can it be better than the best?
Yeah.
Or one of the best sets.
You're right.
Yeah.
This is coming down the other side of the bell curve.
Yeah. I think it would. I'd probably give it a higher grade if it was a 4-5-1 rather than a 4-8-1.
All kidding aside, the plot's it's a good plot.
It's going to be really solid, I think. It's a great way to start out the city plots. It fits well in Stark on any turn. Mm-hmm. Kind of give them some additional advantage off of winning on defense. Also in Stark, now it gives them 2 4-8-1 plots available yep. to them, which are just, I don't know, that's just super solid stats. If yep. they need to go first or second at any given time, they can get it done.
They can probably do it.
Yeah.
Melee? Yeah, definitely. I do dig that it's not card draw. You reveal an out to your hand, so it gets around the draw cap. when he went the challenges on defense.
It's okay. I guess it's still hard for me to beat those city plots as far as the first one you're going to play, to choose this one even. Maybe this will end up like negotiations at the Great Sept. Who knows? But regardless, I'm gonna give it a C.
See, I think this is. I mean, don't get me wrong. Negotiations is a plot that I am indeed learning to appreciate more and more. But I still think it's kind of four specific types of decks, and it's not something that you want to lead with in a game. So that very much limits your ability to use the other city plots along with it. Coup does not suffer from that problem.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. On negotiations with the Great Sept, it really makes... I mean, I feel like the city plot is tagged on there in order to keep you from playing other city plots with it.
Agreed.
With this card, I mean, you easily could lead with this and set up your city plots if, you don't have to be playing any Maesters or even have a lot of armies in your deck, or you're not playing Shadows. So it's just more seed plots you can use.
Yeah, this one's a great seed plot, and if you're looking for that power struggle like you mentioned, specifically, I don't know, maybe say you're running a Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill deck that wants to play to be a dragon. Now you've got King's Landing Coup to start off first turn to get that power struggle, and you're starting with a 6-10-1 that may draw in quotes, may reveal and put
may get you some extra cards.
Yeah. Whew. That's hotness, I think.
I'm feeling the C on it. The stats are really good. The effect may or may not do much. I mean, it may just end up being a blank plot sometimes if you just don't happen to be winning the challenges on defense, or if you'd rather win them on offense to do things.
I'm giving it like a B plus, I think. City plots are already strong, and with another very strong seed plot, they're going to be freaking everywhere.
That's true.
This just kicks that off and gets it rolling so well.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Just for the fact that it does give more city plot options, I guess I can see upping it to a C+ probably. But the effect is just lackluster compared to pretty much all the other city seed plots. You don't want to choose it if you don't happen to already be able to use one of the other ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been running a fair amount of Routing the Charge recently out of a Stark deck. So, I mean, I could see that being pretty fun, having Routing the Charge in hand, revealing this and just being like, yeah, I'm going to win on D, I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to get to draw a card, it's going to be awesome. But, I mean, a C, I'm not saying it's a bad card, it's just,
Fair enough.
No, not good.
Well, there's our review of A Turn of the Tide. If you happen to particularly disagree, definitely let us know your thoughts. Daryl, where can they let us know?
You can hit us up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/2champs1chump. Hit us up on Twitter at 2champs1chump at twitter.com. Or through our Gmail account at 2champs1chump@gmail.com. And I think Google Plus is still a thing.
Somehow it still is.
It may be.
Yeah, and if you really want it, if you want to start a petition, we might open up a MySpace. Maybe.
Can we do that?
Is that literally still a thing?
Yeah, like, is that actually possible?
Yes, MySpace is still a thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, can they let people sign up for it still?
Oh, as far as I know. Huh. It's more about, like, music these days and stuff, but...
We're not really music
per se.
So the most important part of the episode, right?
Yeah, props and or slops.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to butt in here real quickly.
Okay.
For anybody that doesn't know yet, and there are probably hundreds of Two Champs and a Chump listeners that don't know yet, I'm going to give props here to Mr. Brett Zeiler and Mrs. Brett Zeiler.
There you go.
Thank you.
Married man. Props to you, sir, for taking the plunge.
So, yeah, way to be.
Thank you. I am going to give slops to American Airlines.
Yeah, man, that sounded like a pits.
For being just a terrible company. Yeah, I don't fly particularly often, maybe two or three times on a good year, sometimes a little less than that, very rarely much more. But in the past, I've pretty much only ever flown on Delta. So this is the airline my family's always used. And I have literally never had an issue with them. Not once have I ever been delayed or anything like that. This was my first time flying with American Airlines and Alicia's second. She flew with them when she went down to Mexico on vacation last year. And that should have been a warning for us because, like, a month before her vacation, they just decided they didn't fly to Mexico on the day she was leaving.
Oh.
And so she had to find another flight down there.
Well, then.
In this case, our flight on Monday was delayed for almost 5 hours.
Jeez.
So we spent a lot of time just sitting in the Dallas airport. And it's not the big issue was our first flight was delayed for about an hour or so, which made us miss our connecting flight from Dallas. And once we got to Dallas, we saw that there were two more flights leaving for Vegas before our flight that we got rescheduled on, but those were both full and booked. So that was even more infuriating because we missed our flight because of American Airlines and they didn't put us on an earlier one. So that sucked. We lost basically a day of our vacation. And then coming back, we landed on time, but then there was congestion at the gates. So we sat on the runway for about 45 minutes and then almost missed our connecting flight back home.
Oh, no. So why did you guys pick American?
They were cheap.
Wow. Okay. If you're ever going back to Vegas, check out Allegiant.
They only fly back early. And we wanted to be able to stay as late as possible on the last day.
Okay, gotcha.
I had originally looked at them.
Yeah, I've flown them several times out to Vegas and back and had no problem. But you're right. I'm trying to remember. I want to say our flights back were at like 8 a.m. or something, mm-hmm. which meant getting up at like 5:30 or something and mm-hmm. all that funness.
Yeah, I use Allegiant as well. It's always been good. Anywho. I'm giving a slop to my gums, my infected gum where the wisdom tooth is grown in. Right now, I can say that I am in the most pain I've ever felt in my mouth ever. And if today I seemed unfunny or lack of enthusiasm or didn't know what a card did after reading it, it's because all I can think about right now is the raging pain in my mouth, which is ridiculous. So I will be going to the dentist, unfortunately, within a week, so no earlier than that, and hopefully just getting this thing cut out of my mouth or hopefully it won't be infected anymore. Who knows? So slops to the human body for just being a terrible, sinister thing. Seriously, like right now, I'm going to rip it out myself with my bare hands.
Oh.
Well, that sounds violent. Well, I'm going to be the positive one this episode. I'm going to throw out some more props, this okay. time to a Netflix exclusive series that I've started watching this week. I'm about halfway through the series now. I'm watching Hemlock Grove.
How is that?
I am really digging it. Did you watch American Horror Story?
I have not seen it yet. It's on my instant queue, but I've not
watched it. Dang. I was going to say kind of imagine a mashup of Supernatural and American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll kind of get a feel
and
for it.
And Cruel Intentions.
Yes. Actually, and Cruel Intentions. Have you been watching it, Daryl?
Yeah, okay. I have.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that part, but yes, you're right. It does give you that vibe an awful lot. I'm digging it. There's a lot of mystery going on, a lot of little subplots and stuff. It kind of bounces back and forth between being like pretty creepy for an episode and then having like something kind of campy, which mm-hmm. is weird, and then goes back to being creepy, but it's still been very enjoyable.
Okay. Yeah, I was interested in it. It got advertised a lot in Vegas since Eli Roth has his haunted house there on the Strip.
Oh, so it was, really?
Blown up on the Planet Hollywood billboard.
Oh, cool. Did not know he had a haunted house over there.
Yep, the Goratorium.
Huh. Need to check that out sometime. And just nice little coolness factor, Chief and D from BSG are both in it. Chief yep. Tyrol and Duwala.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I do have a prop. I'm not going to be all negative this week. It is to something that we've talked about on the show many times before, the fantastic cooperative superhero card game Signals of the Multiverse. I've actually had a chance to play with it several times in the last couple weeks. And that game still continues to impress. I was finally able to actually start playing with the newest expansion last week and played two or three games in. We played a couple games this afternoon and it's really, really good. Still, Omnitron X is pretty much my favorite character ever.
Yeah, it looks like he just does everything.
Mm-hmm, he really does.
I am gonna have one last prop and I'm done. Because my mouth hurts. I'm going to go ahead and prop Fantasy Flight Games for giving us our first exclusive card to spoil. That is just really awesome. I'm really glad that they
felt
us worthy to give us that opportunity. And I hope it's something we can continue to do, and hopefully we will. But just props to a company that has treated us pretty good, given us the game that we love so much and brings us all together, and giving these podcasters just a chance to do something awesome, which FFG provides time and time again. So really awesome. Continue to do it, FFG. We love you. Thanks, Holmes. Also, sorry for any time we slopped you. Thanks for setting that aside.
Agreed.
All right, well, Will, do you have anything else?
No, I think that covers the main stuff I wanted to hit on.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So thank you, our beautiful listeners. I'm doing a little pandering here this episode. Can you guys tell that?
Nah.
Okay, well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump. Join us next week. The same time, same place. We talk about something else.
Danger Zone!
Well, speaking of rating cards, I think we've got something way more exciting than Daryl's personal rating system coming up.
You should see how I rate women.
Oh, no, I mean, there's one correct way to rate women. This has already been explained to me by a college chemistry professor.
Well, explain.
Oh, okay. Well, you rate them in millihelens. It's a very scientific system where, all right, you know, Helen, as in Helen of Troy, okay, was worth 1,000 ships that the Greeks sent to rescue her, okay? So one Helen, the most beautiful, perfect woman on Earth, is worth 1,000 ships. Well, this converts very nicely to a metric system wherein you can rate women then in millihelens, essentially how many ships a woman is worth.
That's nice. Really funny, actually.
Yeah, oh, I thought it was hilarious. The girls in the class at the time...
not so much.
Less so, but some of them were good sports about it. So, you know, Kristen, if you're listening to this, I will tell you your Millehellen rating later some other time in person.
It's about three. Sorry. Will told me before the show, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes.
My mouth fucking hurts. Yep, he fell. Hey, Will. Will. Brett? Oh, both you fuckers left? Oh, this is great.